Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Our broadcasters are all ages and abilities. This is what makes us your local station. VectisRadio.com.
Good evening and welcome to the Movie Review Show. My name is Tosin and I will be your host for the next hour as we go through what is on at the cinema recently and also what you, the listeners, have decided are your worst films of 2017. With me in the studio as we go to the end of this year and look forward to a new year of more filmic goodness, the usual stalwarts, Sharon.
Hello.
And Sean.
Hiya.
Right, cool. So, If last week is anything to go by, we don't have that much time to cram in what everybody else has been telling us about what they think about the films this year. So let's just get straight into it and talk about the films that we've seen recently. So we have seen, I think between us, Pitch Perfect 3.
Pitch Perfect 3, yep.
The Greatest Showman.
Yep.
Yeah, The Greatest Showman. And I think last week I spoke about Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. And
we both acted upon your recommendation.
And both went to go see it. So it's always good. Okay, let's start with that. Let's start with going back and seeing what we spoke about last week and then you guys went to see it. What did you guys think of Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle?
I agree with you. I was not expecting to be as entertained as I was, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun. I thought it was nicely paced because everyone said, oh, it did flag a bit or it goes on a bit. And I thought, well, I thought it actually kept the pace quite well. And I just enjoyed it, yeah, as a romp of a film.
Yep.
Me too. I agree with you. I mean, I was expecting the worst. I was really, from this movie, I was thinking, this is, and from the trailer, I was thinking, this is just going to be awful, but I need to see it. And I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good, fun movie, you know, quite entertaining.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
how do you think it would stack up to the original Jumanji?
I quite like the idea. I quite like the idea. Because
it's based on a video game rather than a board game.
Because the game sort of changed, didn't it?
Yeah, the game changed a bit, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, but there was still the sort of original idea there.
Yeah,
you have to get through this level, and the level is the Hungry Hippos or whatever it is.
And Jack Black was... He was great.
He's probably the performance of the film.
Yeah, he was great.
Jack Black as a teenage girl.
Yeah.
I like The Rock anyway, Dwayne Johnson, but I thought he was quite funny in a way. He's like intense smolder. I just thought.
Dr. Smolder Bravestone.
And I just thought, and he says, you do that on purpose, you just do that. This smoldering look. And I just thought that was funny. There were some funny moments in it that was good.
Yeah, it was really entertaining. I really enjoyed it and was pleasantly surprised.
All right, cool. So now let's go on to, well, I'm glad you guys agree with me. The thing is, because every now and then on this show, like, you get that whole thing where when you say something is, when you review a film and then someone else goes to watch it, you're like, oh my God, are they going to disagree with me? Are they going to think I'm rubbish? But it's good when it actually happens and people agree with you. And okay, so now we're going to go into this week and we're going to kick off with Pitch Perfect 3.
Pitch Perfect 3.
Now, this is a film that both Sharon and I have seen.
Yes.
Pitch Perfect 3. So Pitch Perfect
3.
And you've seen it as well. We've all
you've
seen it.
Yeah, we've all seen
Pitch Perfect.
Oh,
yeah, I did let you know. Yeah.
Hey, there, with the pitches.
Yeah, the pitch, with the pitches. The pitches. And so now this is Pitch Perfect 3. The poster has the slogan, they're back, pitches. And you've got to say that very, very carefully on
you
radio.
You have to, yeah.
I'll say that. And I feel this is like the most unexpected trilogy of the past decade or so. Because obviously you have Anna Kendrick, you've got like, what's her name?
Rebel Wilson,
yeah. You got Rebel Wilson, Anna Camp, Brittany Snow. And it started off in that they are an a cappella singing group in a university. And, you know, the first film had this sort of, almost like a sort of sports movie kind of thing around it, where first of all, they're going to get together and, oh, they're going to come up from adversity and they're going to be rubbish, but they're going to bond and they're going to come together and then they're going to go to the big contest at the end and, like, you know, in which they triumph one way or another. And I the first Pitch Perfect, I thought was like almost perfectly formed.
Yes,
I really, really liked that movie. Really,
yeah,
enjoyed it.
I think
it,
I was, you know? Almost. I remember when I watched it, I was like, "This might go into my top 10 films to watch in any situation whatsoever," because it's just such a perfectly formed movie, simple concept that sort of like carries through. And in the second one, and I always thought that they would have a little bit of a problem because in the first one, it's contained. They're in a university. The structure is already in there. The reason for them to come together is in there. And I feel like they would have a problem with that. And by the time they come to the third one, when we meet them, most of them have graduated, so they're also spread around. And I always thought the problem this film would have is bringing everybody back together. It's how you're going to bring them back together. How are you going to actually get?
Why would they get back?
Yeah, why would they get back together?
Moved on, yeah.
What is the impetus for this? For them to come, what is the impetus for the story? Is there going to be another contest? Why will there be another contest? Why would they be in it? And I personally felt like these were all going to be issues before I even watched the film. I was like, you're going to have trouble bringing these people back in because you're not using a new cast. You're having the same people in it. And I don't know what you guys thought. I don't know what you guys thought. I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought that was a problem with this film. It's like bending over backwards to get everybody, to get the gang back together for something that might not necessarily make sense. But I'll let you guys talk and let you guys say what you thought about it.
Okay. For me personally, I was really, really disappointed with this movie.
Yep.
Because the first one was great. The second one stood up well.
I agree with that.
This one just falls on its, awesome.
On its proverbial.
On its proverbial.
On its proverbial, yeah.
It was just like, it was terrible. We had some really, really awful acting. I mean, the acting
John
was terrible.
Lithgow,
John Lithgow was absolutely,
I don't think he would fool anyone with his Australian accent.
Abysmal in this. Totally, totally abysmal. I was like, what are you doing, John? Why would you do this? Why would you even be involved with something like this? Terrible. And I think we were talking earlier about the walk, and there's one bit in this film, well, a couple of bits, where when they all get together in one thing, and there's that slow walk where they're walking.
Oh yeah, the slow mo hero.
And the real slow mo with them all, and the old music goes like that. And I'm like, oh no, come on, taken straight out of the Fast and Furious. So yeah, and I mean, I don't know, Sharon. I'll let you.
Yeah, Sharon, what did you think?
I liked it. Well, I thought it was ridiculously over the top. But if you're going to have a Pitch Perfect 3, then you've got to go big or you got to go home, haven't you? Let's face it. It's got to be. It's a ridiculous premise. It's an a cappella group. And so the whole, it's amazing. But I thought it was funny. But I think I probably would be more the demographic that it would appeal to.
Yeah.
Someone who's watched the previous two, someone who likes the music, who doesn't care that it's a ridiculous plot and it's a ridiculous premise, and that even the people in it sort of, you can always see them sort of looking at each other thinking, we're just doing this to have a good time.
that really does come across, because there is this theme that keeps coming through the film where it's like they just want to sing together again. They just want to be around together
it's
again.
That they know their lives are moving on and they're moving apart from each other because one of them's had a baby now and their lives are beginning to change.
Yeah.
Where they're not ever going to be able to come back to that place. I think it's almost like the last hurrah. So
yeah.
For the fans who are watching it, I think for us it was the same thing. It was just a last laugh, really.
Yeah.
Because that this is gonna, they can't carry on.
Yeah.
So the more over the top they made it, to me, it just made it just completely, the plot was just beside the point, really. It was just a good excuse for a party at the end
of a
series of films.
And I think when you said, I think the people who made this film, that was their approach. They were like, look, this is not going to make any sense. And we're not even going to try and make it make sense. And they keep having these little nods that tell you that they know how silly this whole thing is.
Yeah.
That they know how silly it is and they know how stupid. But the thing with it is, besides everything I've said, I don't think the film hangs together as a film. Like, the logic of...
Oh, the plot makes no sense.
The plot
whatsoever.
Makes no sense. How they get from this to that, how this affects that, and how that affects that.
Things that we've never heard of before suddenly were thrown in the last point.
You're like, wait, how does that affect that? How does that work? And that all of a sudden, people have skills that you've never heard of before, and then John Lithgow shows up, and you're like,
yeah, the whole daddy issue thing suddenly just appeared out of nowhere.
The daddy issue thing, because two characters, because in this film, I think they try and do more to give, because you have
to
this.
Get them to bond a bit more.
Well, no, then it's not even that. You have the. Okay, so in the Pitch Perfect, you have about, what, eight women?
Yes.
You have about eight women, and usually in the first two, they only really focus on two.
Yeah.
That's the Anna Kendrick character and the Rebel Wilson character.
Yeah.
They're the only ones that even have an arc of any sort to actually talk about. And this one, they tried to give more of them stuff to do, but two of them, they had all pretty much exactly the same daddy issues thing. And so with the plot, you could. It just didn't link from one thing to another. You're just kind of like, okay, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't, even within the story that you've accepted, oh, it's silly, that doesn't link to that, and what they said that they're looking for there doesn't link to, so it doesn't hold together as a film at all. But I did find myself constantly laughing because the film is pretty much like a whole bunch of skits put together, just sort of like smashed together, and sort of like, okay, cool, well, is that an hour and a half yet? Okay, cool, we got enough skits to fill half an hour and a half. Because the way my wife said it, she said like, okay, I would watch the first Pitch Perfect movie again. She says that one, I would watch 2 minute snippets of it again.
You don't need to see it again to watch it.
Come on, the first one was so good.
Yeah, the first one was brilliant.
Was so good.
And I felt almost as if they accepted that they would never be able to hit that again, because the story, it just has problems, like I said, with how do you put these people together?
Yeah.
What is the aim? What are they trying to get to?
What's their motivation for the whole? But yeah, I would probably say, for some people, don't ever watch the other two. Just watch the first one. The first one is entirely self-contained.
Yeah, definitely. Yes,
the second two are just for a lark, really. They don't
Two was okay.
So what I liked about the second one was somewhere in this sort of a cappella contest, and they all sing the same song, don't they? At one point, there's this montage where every single group that gets up on stage, they all sing. I think it's Don't Stop Believing or something, because of the whole Glee thing.
Yeah.
But they all sing every entrant in the competition sing the same song, which I thought was funny, because it was, you know, after Glee, everyone sang Journey songs. It was like all we ever heard.
The thing is, though, I would agree. I think the second one is good, but it some of the problems that the third one had begun to show up in the second one.
Yeah, possibly.
They had begun to show up in the second one, in that it's not as contained. Where is the you had the contest in the first one that gave the film its structure. Then what gives the film the structure in the second one? And by the third one, they were like, they managed to sort of come up with something. And the third one, they're like, yeah, no structure.
Did they really do any a cappella stuff in it? Because from what I was listening to, even when they were supposed to be doing a cappella, there was still, you know, it wasn't pure a cappella, I don't think.
Yeah.
Not like the first one. In the first one,
That was a problem, I thought, as well.
It might be overproduced the same as that. In that sort of the sound.
It was totally overproduced. It was, in this one, more than in the first two, when they're supposed to be singing the a cappella, it sounds like they've mixed this in the studio.
Yeah.
It sounds like they've...
Because I just noticed in the final song, they made a point of like saying, now, okay, she's laying down these tracks, which is going to be like the backing track, and then we're going to sing over it. And then that whole backing thing being sort of stopped halfway through the performance. I thought,
Her pedal
haven't
disappears.
Actually
Her pedal
worried
disappears, all that kind of...
So the things they made a point of setting this up, saying that this is vocal tricks still, but then they sort of just throw that out the window just so they can have a party. I went sit with two friends, one that was a female and one was a chap, and he hated it. He thought it was just, you know, he said, well, I've seen it.
What more do you want?
Exactly. He was just sat there. I don't think he laughed all evening. I think he might have smiled once. But those two gals, we liked it.
The thing is,
just because it was fun and silly.
As I said, I laughed. I laughed all the way through. It doesn't hold together as a film whatsoever.
No.
It's not as perfectly formed. It's not even formed. It's not formed.
Yeah.
It's all over the place.
Mm. I think if you like the pitches, then this one you'd probably just go along for the party if you liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But just don't forget. Don't try to even follow the plot or even understand anything to do with it go at all.
I think there was one music montage that I really liked in this, that I really did like. But there were some issues anyway, but I did love the fact that there's two, because in the pitch, as I said, there's eight of them. They don't really focus on a lot of them. A lot of them get like one note characters, and it's but there's two characters called Jessica and Ashley, and there's a one line in the film that had me in stitches, because there was actually a bit where I was watching the film and I was like, hang on a second, who's she? Where's she come from? And it's because there's these two characters who are just always in the background, throughout the three films. They're always in the background, they're just there. And there's one I so want to say, but I think it would be a spoiler. It would ruin a brilliant joke. But there's this bit in it where
exactly the bit you're talking about.
It cracks me up. But okay, anyway, well, let's go to the next. So how many stars would you give that?
Oh, for filmmaking, and for, I'd probably give it a, you know, three. But for me, entertainment-wise, I'd give it a 3.5.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, I mean, the issues I've had with it, obviously, and that, but you pointed out really good that your wife said it would be nice to watch little bits from it, because I think some of the actual musical numbers were quite entertaining. Yeah. In fact, those they were probably the bits that I enjoyed. The rest, you know, I'd have been better just see a whole film of the whole movie of them doing songs rather than have the plot, you know.
Yeah.
Three stars.
I'll give it 3 out of as well, because I think it doesn't hold together, but it manages to coast on the charm of its stars.
Yeah.
The charm of its stars,
yeah,
and
it is,
the camaraderie there.
It's
yeah.
a likeable film.
It's a like. So they're likeable. You like what they're doing doesn't make any sense,
yeah.
but you do like hanging out with them. So I'll give it 3 out of 5. Right, cool. And now we have The Greatest Showman. Sean, you're the only one who's seen this.
This is a film that
was supposed to be released on New Year's Day, and then moved it to Boxing Day, and they released it. So all the posters say New Year's Day, but all of a sudden it's out in cinemas. So this is Hugh Jackman, big musical.
Based on P.T. Barnum.
Yep.
I went to see this. I was on the mainland. I went to see it. I was sort of thought, what should I do? I know I go. And this was, surprisingly enough, the cinema was pretty full.
Oh, wow.
And at the end of the film, there was even claps. It was like
there was around applause.
This, yeah, they applauded. Say, "Oh, jolly good!" And one person said, "Oh, jolly good!" And it was just quite. Oh, this is unusual. You know,
yeah.
I've a couple of times I've been there where they've applauded the movie. But yeah, it was quite good to see. The film itself, I think I was really looking forward to it from the trailers and the publicity and all that. It looked like it was going to be absolutely fabulous. I thought, this looks like, I'm like musicals. But all the musical numbers all ended up the same, really. I couldn't really, it was pretty much each song was similar, you know, with different, of a type. Thank you, Sharon, yeah. Of a type. And always ended up with the same, you know, group of people doing the same sort of things, and the songs would maybe start off slow and then go into a big number, you know, with
it seems like from the trailer and all that, it seems like it's supposed to be quite a, what's the word, an inspirational, affirmative kind of message kind of thing. And it seems like the big song that they had in the trailer, which I will admit to, I mean, I've seen the trailer a couple of times, probably about 10, 15 times now. And each time I hear that song, it kind of gives me goose pimples, that this is me song and everything.
Yeah.
Like that. So is that kind of like what the theme is throughout the song?
I guess so. It's, I mean, is it a stage? Is it a Broadway show?
There is a Broadway show called Barnum.
Years ago,
was it Michael Crawford? Didn't he do it?
I think Michael Crawford did it, and it keeps coming back every now and then. But I think that's a totally different thing from this film.
Yeah.
So I think the story it's telling is a bit different, and the songs are totally different.
Yeah, well, basically the story is obviously this P.T. Barnum. He's got dreams, and he's got a family, and his wife comes from a rich family, but she decides she wants to stay with him. And then he has this idea, originally buys this waxworks, and his daughter say to him, oh, you know, you need a bit of life. And
yeah,
there's a bit earlier on where you see him as a young man, he's like a tailor's apprentice, obviously with his father's the tailor.
Yep.
His father dies, and he's a little bit sort of destitute, and yet, and then he this old lady gives him an apple, and obviously there's a bit of a, you know, she's got a few issues and that, and but it's really kind, and obviously that sticks in his mind when he's and then he comes up with this idea, oh wow, because he tries to get some money for his show, and there's like, you know, Tom Thumb, the little lad, and
okay, so because he starts off with like a wax watch, doesn't he?
Wax watch,
and then
when
they say they're bringing, he's bringing like he sort of brings people who are on the fringes of society, shall we say?
He puts out lots of billboards for, you know, anybody with any interesting quirks,
like the bearded lady,
but he actually goes and finds her, she's got quite a nice voice, so it gets all this gang together, and obviously the critics hate it, you know, they say, oh, it's a bunch of freaks basically that are over this place horrible, and there's a group of people that are like, oh, it's horrible, don't go and watch it, but obviously people do because they're fascinated by the you know, but he wants to get more credibility, he just doesn't want to be seen as a, you know, showman with a he wants to get Good so, praise for his movies.
Yeah, so for his show.
It comes legit, yeah. So, he's, so that the people with the money will actually come and watch it.
He wants to see it as an artist as opposed to Pendley to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
So I mean, so far, it sounds like, with it being a musical and everything like that, I mean, if it sounds like the storyline so far sounds so predictable. It sounds like... it sounds to me like I know where this is going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
basically.
but it's about, for a film like this, I think it's about the execution. If you're going to be a musical and it looks like it has the duds, it looks like it's an old school kind of Gene Kelly kind of thing. So in the end, how do they tell the story? How many stars would you give it?
Okay, I would say you can pretty much work out what the story's going to be. Mm. And I'd probably give it 3 stars. So okay. That would be a 3-star movie as well. You know, it's not like really, really awful with it, but it just doesn't really, it's not as good as I thought it was going to be. I wanted it to be something special, and it wasn't. You know, it was pretty much run-of-the-mill musical, really.
All right. It's
interesting to know what you guys think.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I'm planning to see that before next week.
Yeah. Cool. You can give me your thoughts.
We'll let you know then.
But a 3-star one, anyway.
Okay, cool. And right, we're going to have some adverts now, and then we're going to come back and we're going to go into the listeners' ideas or listeners' picks for the worst movie of the year. Hello and welcome back to the Movie Review Show. Now, for the last half hour or so of this show, we have asked you people out there on Facebook what your worst movies of 2017 are. And this I'm kind of looking forward to, because I don't know about you guys, but I find this weird thing where I like talking about a film that I really, really don't like almost more than I do a film that I really, really...
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah.
It is funny. I think if I really love the film, I can talk about it for ages. If I just like the film, okay. But if I hate the film, I can talk about it loads more than a film that I just like.
Some ways it's easier to put your finger on what you hate about something
than
what it is about why you like it. It's just nice.
It's a bit sad.
But when you hate it, it's like, well, I hate it because of this, and this.
It's a bit sad, but it is a bit fun, quite frankly, to just sort of like grab a film and make a film your punching bag. I have to admit, sometimes I listen to the show that we've done, and some of the ones I like the most are the ones when I really didn't like a film. When I really, really didn't like a film. But okay, cool. So we asked on Facebook films for worst films of the year, and just because this wasn't the first one that came in, it's actually the last one that came in, but this was the guy who last week, when we asked everybody what your favorite films of the year were, he was the one who asked, are you going to do a worst film of 2017 list? Because there were some really disappointing films this year. So Peter Jenkins, I promised you that we were going to do it this week. I'm glad you managed to get your say in before we started this section. But Peter Jenkins says, plenty of rubbish films and films that should be good but were really disappointing. The worst one has got to be Baywatch. It was funny for about 10 minutes, then completely forgot it was a comedy and turned into a mishmash of garbage.
I didn't see it because I thought that's exactly what it would be.
I have to admit, I've avoided it for pretty much that same reason. I think none of the previews. I never really liked the original film. I mean, the original TV show. Liked the original
TV
show.
Dependent on the Hoff, wasn't it?
Did you see it, Sean?
I was tempted to just because of a certain person's presence in the film.
Oh, Dwayne Johnson. Dr. Smolder Braystone.
He does have a certain smolder.
Dr. Smolder, but you're all about the Dwayne.
I'm all about Smolder.
He should make a movie, Dr. Smolder, and Dr. have smoke coming from his...
And all the girls going,
oh, he took his shirt off.
So I was tempted to watch it just because of that reason, but then I thought, it's still 2 hours of my life that I'm not going to get back.
Okay, the thing is, I have to admit, because I was never a big fan of the original TV show, and none of the previews of this made me think that looks like it's worth my time. So, Pete, thank you for letting us know.
Yeah.
So he carries on. He says notable rubbish films were Flatliners. I thought Flatliners was okay.
To me, it was one of those ones that you watch it, then you'd forgotten that you'd watched it 2 weeks later.
Did it need to be remade? Because I mean, I didn't see Flatliners.
Flatliners. I think in the original 20 minutes, it looked as if it actually had some energy. It looked like it had something to say.
Yeah.
Kiefer Sutherland shows up in a turn that is cleverer than the film. Like Kiefer Sutherland's performance alone is cleverer than the entire film, because he sort of hints at something that links the two films and all that kind of stuff. But it's but then after a while, it just goes into a much substandard B horror movie slasher nonsense. Oh, right. It degrades after a while. So okay, then he says Geostorm.
Yay! We hated that film.
Geostorm. It's like the
awful movie.
Yeah, that is
at
my top five pants.
Okay, we're gonna recap what our worst ones of the year were in a second. We're gonna say Geostorm, but that's definitely on your list.
That's
Sharon.
On my list.
Definitely on your list, Sharon. Geostorm and XXX, Return of the Who the Hell. To quote Peter, it's like XXX. That's not the only time it shows up on this list. This was I was about to say no.
Ezelt.
I mean he goes between knowingly, like things that are knowingly silly, like the Fast and Furious movies, things that are great, like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, and things that are just stupid, like this.
Yeah. So, did you go see it?
One of the top grossing films of last year. Vin Diesel's were the top grossing films because he was in XXX, he was in Guardians of the Galaxy, and he was in the Fast and Furious thingy. So he was actually the top of the earners last year.
Wow.
Unbelievably.
That's a mix of inspiring, happy, and just plain depressing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but okay, because XXX, this is a film that when you looked at it, the trailers and everything like that, it looked like he was essentially bringing back this character who I believe was supposed to be dead. He was bringing back this character. And then, but it looked as if he was trying to do a lesser version of the Fast and the Furious movies. Now, Sean, your feeling on the Fast and the Furious movies, you have made well known.
Well known.
And a lesser version of that. Just,
oh, dear.
Can you get less than zero?
I still think, look, the Fast and the Furious movies are superhero movies.
I think that must be the Fast and Furious franchise, because they do it in every movie, is that slow-mo walk again. I know I harp on about it.
The slow-mo walk has been here for ages. Every film has used it for ages, man. The right stuff. We're going back to the right stuff. They invented the slow-mo walk. Like, Monsters, Inc. has a slow-mo walk.
Miss Congeniality has a slow-mo walk.
Why? Why? Why do you need it?
It makes your hair look really good.
Okay, cool. All right. Is disappointing films with the Snowman. Sharon, that's another one on your list. The Dark Tower, that's not the only time it's going to be there. And I'm sorry to say, Mother. I hated the fact that this, I think what he says next, I think goes to the heart of Mother and what Mother managed to do and what managed to achieve in this year for film. It's like, I hated the fact that I had to look up what it was actually about after I saw it, as I had avoided any spoilers before I watched it. You needn't have bothered, Peter, because there's absolutely no way you could have avoided. Nothing anybody would have told you about Mother would have been a spoiler.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah, and because
I disagree with that one, because that's probably one of my top ones.
No, but it is. Personally, I disagree, but generally, I agree with him, because it is a very polarizing film.
It is a very polarizing film,
and it's the kind of film that if people say they hate it, I'm not even mad, because I'm like, I can totally understand why you hate it. I can totally understand why you do not like that film, but I think it was a film that was made for some people to not like.
could be a good point.
Yeah. And it was made for some people to like, because it's just that kind of film.
Did you ever get to see it, Sharon, in the end? Or not?
I never did in the end, no.
Right.
Ah. Yeah, and that's actually what I loved about Mother. I loved the fact that it made people go away and think about it.
It took me a day and a half to work out.
And it's very rare to find a film that does that nowadays, that while you're watching it engages you all the way through and at the end makes you think, I need to go think about this. It's very, very rare to find that. And so that's one of the reasons why I like that. But that is Pete's thing. Okay, so a quick rundown of what our worst was. My worst, number one, was Transformers The Dark Knight. Hated that film. Followed by The Limehouse Golem. I thought that was just such a missed opportunity. And then the final thing that they end up with was just disappointing and rubbish. And you guys reminded me of this one, The Mummy.
The Mummy.
The Mummy, which I thought was just, it just kind of, it was like as if it'd gone online and found like everything people hate about Tom Cruise films and put them all in the same film.
Yeah.
And then tried to think and seemed to think that that was big enough to launch a shared universe. And it was just so arrogant in trying to do that while even trying to make one good film to begin with that it just got on my nerves. But those are the three I could think of. Sharon, what were yours?
Mine were Alien Covenant.
Yep.
Just a mess. I thought Geostorm, just ghastly. The Snowman has already had a mention. The Mummy. It was just, yeah.
I like that.
For all the wrong reasons. I'm just trying to remember. There was quite a few, wasn't there? There were some extras.
There were quite a lot of also-rans.
There's a few that I just thought were missed opportunities. Like they could have been okay, but they weren't. I was reminded actually by someone's list of films, Assassin's Creed. I've forgotten that that was this year.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I thought that was interminable. I thought it was never going to end.
Yeah, I forgot about Assassin's Creed.
Films you forget about.
Thank you for reminding me how much I disliked that film when I sat through it.
Michael Fassbender has not had a good year.
So that would make him appear three times on my list than if I include that one. And I like Michael Fassbender, I genuinely do.
Michael Fassbender's like, oh yeah, Alien Covenant, The Snowman.
And now in Assassin's Creed.
Oh, good Lord, he's not had a good year.
Not had a good year this year.
Okay, Sean, what was your list?
Okay, mine was pretty much Alien Covenant on the list, so I guess we all agreed on that. That was. I've got two controversial ones, but this was purely for the fact that they were dull, tedious and boring, or at least that's what I thought, and that's Murder on the Orient Express and The Lost City of Z. Lost City of Z.
Yeah.
So those two were just dull.
I think it was Z because he's a...
Yeah, dull and boring as far as I was concerned. Limehouse Golem, obviously, on the list.
Yep.
The Ritual, supposed to be a horror film, started off really good and then was just a total farce, total letdown.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was that it?
So, yeah, pretty much. And okay. I didn't enjoy it. I know you guys did, but I didn't enjoy it.
What was that?
It.
Oh, It. All right, cool.
Another dull film.
That's the problem with that film. When you said you didn't enjoy it, I thought you were
talking about The Ritual. Yeah, I know. I think I did that last time when we reviewed it.
I liked it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So let's carry on. We have Glenn Spires. Glenn Spires says, John Wick, Chapter 2.
See, I like...
Yeah, I like
that. It's my favourite film of the year, but I like John Wick 2 because it's bonkers.
It is, yeah. It was fun.
Okay, let's just carry on with Glenn says. Glenn says, very, very silly. I did enjoy some of it, despite the fact it made no sense. Ultimately, it was the worst film I saw this year, and I have very little to say about it because there's very little to say about it. And Giles Newth carries on with that and says, I have to concur with one of the other viewers. He's talking about Glenn. He says, John Wick 2 was particularly hard to keep watching. When Mr. Wick had a gun... So did everyone else who promptly got shot. When Mr. Wick didn't have a gun, neither did his enemies who promptly got dead. Except near the end, when he did get shot in the stomach. But hey-ho, just a flesh wound. Absurdly awful. Now, I'm with the two of you. I quite like John Wick. I quite like John Wick Chapter 2. And I think it's one of these films that knows it's absurd. It knows it's absurd, and it carries on with that.
It's like the A-Team, isn't it? You know, lots of bullets fly around, but only ever the bad guys get hit.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
You do have a lot of people... I mean, this is a film where you have somebody... They have a sequence where they go to somebody who makes you a bulletproof suit. And I'm not talking like, you know, like an Iron Man suit. I'm talking like a three-piece Tom Ford suit
that is bulletproof.
that is bulletproof. But they go through the whole thing, the Kevlar lining. It's like, but it does hurt a little bit.
I
liked it.
Yeah,
I liked it. I thought it was stupid. I thought it was escapist. Yeah. I loved the fact that they had their own mythology, that they went deeper into the mythology. And I like the whole thing about when the whole assassins and all that and what their code of honor is. And I do quite like that. I think, but this is a film where the original John Wick, this guy goes on a murderous rampage because somebody killed his dog and stole his car. And that's your storyline. What happened?
They killed my dog. I think that's the best line in a movie. That, for me, or one of the best lines. John Wick's not the boogeyman, he's the man you send to kill the boogeyman. It's just relentless.
And it's the fact that, you know, that once the second everybody says John Wick, everyone's like, oh,
yeah,
oh, I know. John Wick, oh. And like, you just have that. He's.
It's like the opposite of James Bond. He's like, everyone goes, ah, Mr. Bond.
Yeah.
And this is like, John Wick. Ah!
Everybody just immediately starts like, you know, alive. Cacking themselves.
Yeah.
And it's done like he's supposed to be. I think it's silly. I think it's supposed to be silly. Yeah. And I know that it. Everybody he meets seems to have the aim of a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
but yeah. He had a bulletproof suit.
It was Keanu being super cool, as cool as you could possibly be.
But I quite like him in this. I mean,
he plays it really well.
I think he plays it really well, like a hard-boiled, silly. This is about the action. It's not about the logic. I think it works quite well.
Yeah, it works for me.
But I can
see why that you get to the point where you're thinking, oh, really?
I can see why people would not like it. And we had Kieran Thompson, who says, John Wick 2 was the London Has Fallen of 2017. I'm not sure if he's saying that as a good thing or as a bad thing.
No, we don't know on that.
I'm not sure if he's saying that as a good thing or a bad thing. It was the London Has Fallen. I think it's better than London Has Fallen, but yeah. So John Greenham says, XXX3 Xander something or other. So that's like another one for this one popping up. That's like, it's XXX the Return of Xander Cage, to give it its proper title. But I think it seems like the consensus is it was a pile of
one of those films I'd forgotten was out this year. Likewise, I'd forgotten, I know your worst film of the year was
Transformers.
Sorry to remind you again. I know we had that whole like,
it was pretty dire. I probably, that would be close up on the I mean, you could do a bottom 10 really, couldn't you, or even more really, of films, because Transformers, I agree with you.
Yeah, so. The Transformers is just oh, for goodness sake, I don't, okay.
Sorry for
reminding
you.
We're going to say that every time we want to get it, we go Transformers.
Okay, cool. So that we can keep our FM license, we're going to go to some adverts now, just know that I'm going to be talking about Transformers in like unfettered way during this ad break. Welcome back to the Movie Review Show, where we are talking about listeners' worst films of 2017. We have been through quite a list, but we only have about 15 minutes, and we're going to carry on with it. And now we're going to have a section in which we dedicate to those people who don't get to go to the cinema as often as maybe we do. So, as Sharon, you were just saying how you forget about the fact that not everybody goes to the cinema like every week.
Yes, because we think when we have the review show here, plus we're part of the Cineworld quiz sort of environment, we tend to go to the cinema every week.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And you forget there's quite a high proportion of the population who only really go to like event films, so some of the big films, that's what they'll go to see, or as a special occasion. So they may only see two or three films a year.
Yeah.
Whereas we'll see sometimes two films a week.
And so...
So the norm may be only four or five films a year for some people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at the cinema, definitely. And so for some of those people, I want to say, Paul Yenley, thank you for getting in touch with us. You said, because I tagged him in this, and he says, only when you tagged me in the first one did I realize how few movies I've seen this year. I've seen two, basically, which likely isn't enough to be fair. So he declined to tell us what he thought his worst film that he saw was. So Seb says, same sort of problem here. I've seen about four movies this year, and they've all been good. At a push, I'd say that Dunkirk was my least favorite. Pushed him what films those were, and he said were The Last Jedi, Guardians 2, Dunkirk, and Baby Driver. Oh, and he says Beauty and the Beast as well. And he says that he had to put that at the bottom for sheer auto-tuned offensiveness. Now, Seb, I know Seb, but Seb he's a guy who's into his musicals, and he does a lot of musicals and stuff on stage. So if he says it was auto-tuned, I have to go with him.
He might know. He can pick up the signs.
Yeah, he can pick up the signs. I didn't notice, but hey.
I didn't notice.
And then Andrew Nordbrook says, barely been to the cinema this year and luckily only saw good films.
Oh, well, good for him.
Yeah, good for him. Good for him. On like us. We do this for you people out there. We go see terrible films so that you don't have to. So he says, looking at my Netflix history of 2017 movies he's watched, I'd have to say The Circle. He says, this is a film I think was released in cinemas shortly, but then Netflix took it over or anything like that. It has a great cast, Emma Watson, Tom Hanks, John Boyega, Karen Gillan, but it's predictable and a slow storyline. Yawn. So The Circle, you can find that on Netflix. I've seen it. It has Tom Hanks pretty much playing what looks like a Steve Jobs character.
Right.
But it's like, I can see how that film could be a bit, possibly a bit preachy. I can see it just from the trailer and all that. All right, cool. And I believe that is all. And then we get on to Joe Briscoe. Joe Briscoe, who gave us, he didn't just give us a film. He gave us a list, which he has termed the definitive worst of 2017 list.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, essentially, if you disagree with this list, as far as he's concerned, you are wrong, objectively. So, this is a great thing about community radio. It's about opinions. Yeah. People get to give their opinions. We get to see what they say. All right. And he says, it's been another bad year at the movies, but big franchises like Alien and Star Wars provided the biggest disappointments of 2017. And badly written pretentious bores like The Limehouse Golem, Murder on the Orient Express, and The Lost City of Zed were the biggest wasters of our precious time. Going to the movies has not been a particularly worthwhile thing this year, with only the occasional nugget of gold, in brackets, Mother, bearing.
There you have it again. One man's gold is another man's...
Exactly. Yeah. And Mother, yeah, one man's gold is another man's...
One man's treasure is another man's trash or whatever.
Exactly, yeah, pretty much. But yeah, one man's mother is another man's mother. Quite frankly.
My man's better than your mum.
So, with the old occasional nugget of gold, in brackets, Mother... Colossal. Now, Colossal, I'd forgotten.
Colossal
was a good
terrific
film.
Terrific movie.
I really like Colossal.
Did you see that? I know the film, but I haven't seen it this year.
That was absolutely brilliant.
I think Colossal was the first film that I saw this year. Well, I didn't hear much about it. I saw a trailer and I thought, I need to go watch that film.
Yeah.
I need to go. I figured it wasn't going to be in cinemas that long, but I had to go track it down and watch it before it left, because I was like, I want to see how this plays out. It looked like a very interesting concept.
That was, terrific movie, Colossal.
The Handmaid. Now, The Handmaid, this is a South Korean adaptation I believe it's a South Korean adaptation of an English novel
set
in the 1920s. And I haven't seen it, but I think that's just arrived on Amazon Prime, so I might have to make a day to see that. So with only the occasional nugget of gold to be found among the flaccid, turgid rubbish. Then he goes on to give us his list of the biggest cinematic sins of the year are as follows. The Limehouse Golem, amateurish.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, The Limehouse Golem, I just thought was, I think it started off interestingly, and then I've seen a film throw away.
Yeah.
Everything good it had going for it after the first 20 minutes.
I didn't get to watch that. It's one of those films where I was busy that weekend, but I would have seen it.
I think after you heard Sean and I talk about this film, it killed any enthusiasm you had for possibly watching this film whatsoever.
I was fully intending to see it, then I thought, I missed it on my sort of normal film slot, and then I sort of heard the reviews of yours. I thought, I don't think I'll bother.
it's a shame, but I just really, really don't think I cannot recommend that film with any good conscience to anybody. So, Murder on the Orient Express, he says, embarrassing. Now, I don't agree with this.
I didn't think it was embarrassing. I thought the first half hour, excellent. Really good. But then as soon as I got on the train, for me, that's when it slowed.
Yep.
And then to me, it never really picked up the pace. But then I think for my own failing for that film was the fact that I knew the story too well.
Yep.
So it didn't have any surprise. It didn't hold any surprises for me.
Yep.
So the key thing about a murder mystery is like, who did it? And when you know who did it, and then nothing new was revealed through this particular showing of it, to me, it just became a bit of an ordeal.
For me, dull.
What did you think of the moustache? The moustache.
Oh, that's awful.
Well, it is the moustache.
The good, I must say, one saving grace, Derek Jacobi.
As the chauffeur, as whatever he was.
Right. He was the Batman.
Chauffeur? The Batman.
He was the Batman,
he was good.
So the thing with this film was, I think I agree slow and all that kind of stuff, and I think treat it like a period drama, which is what I did, and I think it works. And I didn't know what the storyline was or anything like that, but I figured it out. But I think that's because so many things have copied Murder on the Orient Express. But I think and the thing is the mustache, I thought it looked terrible in pictures, but when it actually started moving and it was actually in action on screen, I didn't mind it that much. I actually thought, oh yeah, okay, cool, that kind of works. But anyway, it was a hit, and Death on the Nile is coming.
I shall not bother.
Death on the Nile is definitely coming. All right, cool. He carries on. Assassin's Creed, turgid.
Oh, that was just interminable. It seemed to go on forever.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. That's Fassbender again with his big jaws.
I went to see it, but I'd never played the game, and I had no understanding of the game or the world from which it came.
Do you remember,
I just thought it was just deadly boring.
Do you remember a film called Prince of Persia?
Prince of Persia with James Gyllenhaal.
That was really good. I think maybe I was expecting something similar with that.
Well, I thought there were good bits in Assassin's Creed. I think some of it, but it was one of those things where the storyline just it was like, where are you going with this? Why are you giving me that awful? Not that again. It has some tropes in it that just really annoyed me.
Thought it was boring.
Alien Covenant, Unforgivable.
Oh. We all agree with that. We've all agreed on that one.
I still haven't seen Alien Covenant. I haven't seen it. And quite frankly, the thing is, before that film was released, I was asking, why do we really need another Alien movie? And people kept talking about the fact, it's going to go back to the roots. So I'm like, so what, you're just going to give us the first film again? Oh, then when they showed Catherine Waterston and what she looked like, I'm like, okay, so that's just Ripley short hair, vest, carrying a big gun. Yeah. That's just Ripley.
People going about doing stupid things on planets that they don't even check to make.
Just thought it was silly. I didn't like Prometheus, though, so I wasn't full of great hopes for this, but it was far worse than I thought it could possibly be.
I just didn't know why we needed another film. The Ritual, moronic. Sean, you agree with that.
I agree.
Said that already.
Yeah.
It was just funny because I know there was somebody, I think it was Peter Jenkins, who actually said he quite liked The Ritual. But anyway, The Lost City of Zed, Interminable. Didn't see it, but this is also another one that's Amazon Prime.
Boring.
Yeah, because, you and Joe are the only two people I know who have said that this film have had such a bad reaction to it. Everybody else I know, if you look on Rotten Tomatoes and all that kind of stuff, it's been appearing on top 10 lists of the year.
When I looked on Rotten Tomatoes, it was a very split thing, I think, because there was quite a few reviews that said it was dull.
All right. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, all right,
I'm going to call them tedious films.
Okay, we need to zip through the rest of these. We have Life. Life, he says, imbecilic.
It was okay.
Now, Life, I think, was just it was essentially a substandard Alien movie.
Yeah,
like it was going to be. I saw the trailer and I thought, okay, that's just going to be like Alien, but it's not as good. So I didn't bother watching it because I figured, that's what it was going to be. So I'm not surprised that it was a middle of the road, whatever. Now, this one I really, really do not agree with. Logan. He says Logan misjudged.
I don't understand that because I didn't mind Logan.
I loved Logan.
I thought Logan was a good movie. Yeah, I enjoyed
Wolverine and Professor Alexander on a road trip, isn't it?
That's
what the trailer was.
Logan. I thought Logan was beautiful.
I mean, I like the way that sort of was going, because it was made for more of an adult audience, wasn't it? Wasn't
it
to the 12-year-old,
which is Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine. That was Wolverine to a T. And I mean, the opening scene where they're trying to
steal his car.
Guys, come on. So that was okay.
Oh yeah, I have to disagree with that. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, Inexplicable. Now, this is a film that I know loads of people do not like, and I understand why they do not like it. And Sean, I think you're kind of on that list.
I mean, I like the start, the first 20 minutes or so when they go into the different planets.
Yeah,
I thought it was great. I think what probably let it down was the main character didn't quite cut the mustard.
Miscast. I think Dane DeHaan was miscast as Valerian. He is not a square-jawed hero, which you need for this sort of pulpy thing.
Do you agree, Sharon?
I didn't watch it because I looked at the trailer and went, nah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Running on quickly. The Dark Tower, Doll. You said so already.
I was okay with the Dark.
You are okay with the Dark Tower. Yeah. Okay,
I like
cool.
a bit of Idris.
All right, cool.
I'm all right with it.
Transformers: The Last Night. Enough said about that. Incomprehensible. I totally agree. That film sucked. The Mummy, uninspired. We've already said enough about that.
Yeah. Mummy, agree.
Dunkirk, he says, overrated.
I liked that Dunkirk.
I liked Dunkirk.
Okay. It was okay. I was expecting that, I'm going to watch this film again and again and again and again, but it didn't really do that for me. It's okay, but I had a few issues with it.
Okay, and finally, and I left this one to last on purpose, Star Wars The Last Jedi. Inexcusable, he says. And Star Wars The Last Jedi, I think it is probably the most polarizing film of the year.
Definitely.
I would actually say more than Mother.
Yeah.
Purely for the fact that it's Star Wars.
Yes.
And because it's Star Wars, I feel everybody feels that they have an idea of what Star Wars should be.
Everyone feels they own it, like Doctor Who. You become quite possessive of your Star Wars film.
And you think, like, this is the way Star Wars should be. Star Wars should be, it should be this, and that should happen, and that should happen, that shouldn't happen, that shouldn't happen. And because The Last Jedi tries a whole bunch of different things, for some people, that's enough for it to just sort of, it's the most different Star Wars movie that there is.
Yeah.
I think, Sean, you and I, we came down sort of like in a 3 out of 5.
Yep.
3 out of 5. I think that there's some things about it that I like and really admire. There's some shots of it that are beautiful. There's some things that really, really don't work. And I think it's, I think we were talking about it earlier and we said that it was pretty much that the story's going along and then things keep happening that just pull you out of
it. Yeah, for me, as you know, me with movies.
We've got about 10 seconds.
Okay. Me with movies, one thing can switch me off a movie if I think it's stupid. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Anyway, that was us for this year. We will see you in 2018.